Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Isn't it nice to be home? Isn't it nice to be home with my lover and my friend?
Okay, go easy now.
Oh, absence makes the heart grow fonder, my good friend Niall. How are you? I've missed you greatly. And just feels good to be back in your embrace.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. You needed a hug this evening. You're a bit jet lag.
Oh, I'm in bits.
Yeah.
I've been texting Phil O'Connor every night at 5 a.m. and he's always awake. Like, he's like, yeah, I'm here too. Like,
oh, I'm pretty bad for the late nights as well. But
I did go to Amsterdam immediately after getting back from Las Vegas, which didn't help, like, with the jet lag situation.
Did you go straight away?
Well, I was home for about 8 hours and then I went.
Jeez, you're a brave man. Braver man than me. I wouldn't be doing that stuff now.
Oh, it was great time. It's one of the best cities we've been to, me and Elaine, I have to say. But yeah, still was waking up over there at 3 a.m. to 7 and then basically going to sleep again and then waking up because we had things to do or whatever. But yeah, I'm in a bad way, but I'm still alive, just about.
Yeah, it looked like you had a good time.
Yeah, it was decent. Lots of, like, you know, it's weird being, like, it's great being with a full team at MMA fighting at these events, but I'm constantly running around going, am I doing enough? Because you're usually worked off your feet, you know, when you're by yourself. I'm like, can I do something? Like, yeah, relax.
And chill when you're out by yourself, it's like a constant.
Yeah,
like, there's always
something to be done.
You don't have a second.
Like, you're waking up every morning, like, with five things to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a different buzz altogether. But it was a good event. I felt we covered it very well.
Yeah, great job all week. Well done.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
We had a good old week. But and look, it was a home run for McGregor, really. Like, I mean, in terms of his return. We'll talk about a bit about that in a few minutes. I just want to run through the headlines. Because the Eurobash listeners have not got your thoughts, really, on this. I know you've done lots of radio shows and stuff. But I'm sure they want to hear from the man himself. But let's take a look at these headlines first. Joy Herbert signs for the UFC. He will replace Stevie Ray and fight a fellow former Bama champion in Mark Diakese on March 21st. That is a really good fucking fight, isn't it? Oh my God.
Love it, man. I think it's actually better than the Stevie Ray fight. We were having a little chat off air there, and I know I'll get through the headlines in a minute, but in terms of, like, a stand-up bang fight, obviously Mark's really good wrestling, fantastic, really good fight. Probably better than the other fight in terms
really
of stylistic match.
I'm losing my shit about it, to be honest. Cyril Gane v. Shamil Abdurakhimov will go down at UFC 249 in Brooklyn, the same card that we hope Habib will face Tony Ferguson on. Jack Shore will take on Geraldo de Freitas at UFC London as well. Interesting one this, nothing confirmed here, but I love it. Jojo Calderwood offers to welcome Alexa Grasso to 125. That might be
brilliant,
a really nice fight.
Fight.
I think it's a really good fight. Ryan Berdar v. Nemkov is going down on May 9th, 205 title. Ryan will be getting back down to the light heavyweight limits for that one. Paul Redmond v. Georgie Karkanian. And this was broke by Severe MMA earlier this week when it was discovered that Redmond's initial opponent, who was it?
Ryan Scope
was forced from the card. I think it was an injured hand, Andy Stevenson was telling me. Cage Warriors, they have booked Paul Hughes v. Antonio Sheldon for Cage Warriors Manchester. Good to see Paul being booked again. He obviously had fought for Cage Warriors, but he fought for different promotions afterwards. But another great talent there for Irish cards here. We have that Belfast card coming up in May, I believe. 4-0 prospect. You know, him, Reese, Joe, Ian Gary, you know, there's lots of guys here. That's really, really good. All of the Irish will make for really interesting fights when the cards do come here. So that's some really good business there by Cage Warriors. of course, that fight's taking place in March, so Paul could still get a turnaround and fight in Belfast. I'm sure that's what they're hoping for. And finally, I just noticed this today on inthecage.pl. Gamrot finally voicing interest in facing Saladin Parnasse. That is the fight to make of your KSW. Holy shit. I love that. I love it. I think that's the last thing Saladin Parnasse will have to do. Beat another undefeated guy just to prove I'm in a different world.
He's class.
And right now, I'm picking Saladin. I mean, there's a reason why Gamrot sat out for so long. I mean, he knew this kid was there with the interim title. I mean, if it was a piece of piss, why wouldn't you go in and take the one of the most talked about prospect in Europe's, you know, all his momentum and put the first loss on his record?
Yeah, I agree, definitely.
Right, so let's just do a quick cast our minds back to UFC 246 here with Niall McGrath, the Mind McGrath. I mean, it was pretty much a home run from Conor, right?
Yeah, couldn't have gone any better. I think, you know, all week we looked at what he did in the press conferences. The really nice guy, you know, really sort of maybe a little bit like the old Conor McGregor, a little bit, you know, the vibrancy. Talked himself up, obviously. Said he was very confident. It was just a home run. Obviously, he went in there and disposed of the Cowboy in 40 seconds. Like, what more can you say? What more can you do when you're obviously your name and reputation is sort of damaged all over the world, and especially back here, and go out and put on such a performance in a respectful manner as well. I think what he said after the fight as well, to Cowboy and his grandmother and things like that. It's a home run. You know, you go out and you destroy Cowboy, and what was it? Was it bang on 40 seconds?
I think it was 40 seconds, yeah.
What more
it was, like, I mean, yeah, and I think I agree with the way he carried himself before and after. I mean, it was such a big contrast to what we saw at 229. You were obviously there at that fight. And some people were like, oh, I wish there was a bit more controversy and something. I was like, I'm happy with this. Yeah. I'm very content with this. And but I do feel as though if they make that Habib fight, there's so much bad blood there that it can only go in one direction.
Yeah, it can. And it is going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, eventually we're going to see
inevitable. Inevitable.
By the end of the year, I think a lot of people are sort of, which, you know, put a tweet out during the week. Like, a lot of people were, even Dana White, you know, oh, the rematch is going to, like, Tony Ferguson is fighting Habib. Let's hope, right? But, like, people are just overlooking Tony Ferguson big time, man. It's crazy. It's mental. I don't understand it. But if you're looking at McGregor again, as you're saying there, and we're going to talk about, you know, what his demeanor was like in his behavior, he'll get away with it doing a little bit more now. He'll piece it back together. He'll get a little bit more angry in the next fight. It's not as much at certain times, at certain points. And he's not going to be as respectful to Cowboy as everyone else.
I think, like, look, there definitely wasn't the Irish people over there that there were before, not even near it. But I do believe it's a good foundation he's built there. Like,
to win people
back. I'm not messing, man. Like, I have friends that were like, I hope Cerrone kills him, blah, blah, blah. And the day after, they were like, oh, look, he's won me back over. Like, you know, they were being honest. Yeah, but, like, did you feel that as well?
Yeah, like I said it to Brad. I said when we were chatting to Brad on Sunday on YouTube, to Brad Wharton, Cage Warriors commentator, a little chat about the fights, and
he wrote a great article as well in the lead up to the fight. Brad, it might have been afterwards.
Yeah, it was like, MMA Odds Breaker, I think. He put it
really
out with,
nice one.
And it was just interesting that my phone was hopping the next morning, and people going like, "Oh, watching the fight, is he back?" And like, you're just going, "What the fuck? These are guys like, that, you know, were giving."
But we said this would happen if he could put his best foot forward and he could win. And we knew, look, me and you were pretty convinced he was
big time.
And we knew if that could happen, it would provoke interest again, and very good to see Conor speaking directly to the Irish people. You know, to RTE.
Yeah, I was
saying,
just going to say that.
You know,
RTE.
They hold me accountable for what, like, you know, for what I've done. He recognizes that he had a drop off before that fight, and you know, I'm sure he knows himself that he can just keep building from here and hopefully get back to somewhere close to where he was.
Yeah, and I've never seen him. You know, I think it was evident in the things that we were saying in the build up to the fight as well, that the amount of media he did in fight week, he spoke with feckin' everyone nearly, and I think that sort of shows you what we were saying is true in terms of, you know, he wants to put that good image back out there and do things like that.
Well, he's so good at it.
But he has to do it more, you know, that's going to set a precedent for him. And, you know, he has to understand that we're here, we're not going away. And he's going to have to deal with the media, deal with it probably in the same volume on fight week from here on out, if he wants to really sort of go back into the people's minds and have them thinking about him.
Yeah, well, at least he's answered some of the questions. Did he look good? He looked great, you know. But I feel like anywhere we go, it's going to be a big jump. You know, I feel like maybe the best step is Nate Diaz, but I think
I totally disagree.
But like, I mean, for him, in his term,
I think, yeah, and the way he's looking at the moment, like the Diaz fight's always there. I think you need new challenges now, the way he's going, if he's on about this season. Like the Diaz fight, he could lose that fight. I think he, you know, Brad made a point as well last week, and I spoke to you off here about the Paul Felder sort of back and forth, which was very odd to me. I'm thinking maybe Conor's thinking that he's going to have one more two of these fights. He wants one more two of these fights in terms of guys in the top four or five.
Nate's the only name he blatantly said, though, at the press conference. He was like, come on, Nathan.
Yeah, yeah, come on. That was very funny, yeah. Actually. I enjoyed that. But I'm just not sure. I don't know if I'm buying that, because that's going to take a long time to make, to put together. And if Conor wants to stay active, stay in there, like he said to us, like he's promised a lot of people that he's going to do this season, he's going to need to take another fight in the next 2 to 3 months. Habib and Tony aren't fighting until, what are we looking at, did we say?
April. But he believes that he will be fighting that night. He believes one of them is going to drop out and he's going to be stepping in. That's clear. I mean, he said it so many times.
Yeah, listen. No, like this fight's happening this time. I don't care. I'm going to make them. If they're both injured, I'm going to make them get in the ring.
This is why I'm like, if I'm him, I'm his coaches. I like the night fight. I think it's the most winnable fight there out of you know, Habib, Tony, Jorge, Usman. You know, I believe that the most winnable fight there for him is Nate Diaz, and it's a profitable fight.
But when do you think that would take place? You know,
July.
I think he's going to fight before then.
Well, yeah, he could. But, I mean, if he fights in July, it doesn't rule out him fighting again in December. He's done it many times.
I'm worried whether Nate Diaz... I think Nate would obviously take the fight. But, you know, he's come out, I think, said again today that, you know, he's going to watch for the next few months and see what happens before he's getting back in there. If Usman injured, I think Masvidal blew it. Totally blew it.
Yeah, tell me about that, because I didn't watch the broadcast. I know that. Yeah,
but yeah. And the interview was just pain. It was just rubbish.
What did he say?
Literally nothing. That's what he said. It was awful. It was like,
it's mad because he's been hitting the bar, like he's been doing everything so well.
Yeah, and it was just a total letdown. And you know, I think Twitter sort of blew up. People going, I don't want to see this. I've only been using
you guys as an example, because I saw your reaction and Sean Sheehan's, and I was like, shit. It must have went badly.
It was just flat.
That was the fight we were talking about mostly, like, you know.
Yeah, and Usman's injured. You know, there's not many options. I think, man, he might well. I think that's why he's trying to sort of pencil out other people and go put a little tickle there. And obviously, these guys are going to fucking want to fight him, but it is an option. It's something where he's going to build himself if he's looking at this season. And there isn't other options available at this present time and moment. He's going to want to stay active. And I think maybe that's why you're getting the little Paul Felder feelers out there as well.
I think Felder would be, out of the names I've mentioned, I think he's nowhere near getting it. But
I agree with you. But that's what I'm saying in terms of, if these guys are injured, they're not available, not out, Conor wants to stay in there. That is true.
John Kavanagh saying that at 170. And I don't mind them fighting at 170. Like, I mean, you're fighting a lightweight at 170, once we know that. Like,
yeah.
I have no problem with that if they want to avoid the weight cut and fight at the heavier weight class.
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
But I can see, like, look, Conor's going to get what he wants at the end of the day. If he can keep winning, that's all he needs to do. But I can see, like, 55ers who are competing at 55 having a problem with a guy fighting at 170 pounds and then dropping down to fight the title again. But Conor makes his own rules.
I still think his eyes are on Usman. I don't care what anyone says.
Really, yeah?
Yeah, I think it's just the belt. Three-weight world champion. It sets another precedent, sets another bar. He's always after the records. He talked about, you know, Donald Cerrone during the week. He wanted a head kick Donald Cerrone and finish him by...
It's mad. That's the way he was thinking about that the whole time.
That's what I'm saying. You're saying it there. Like, yeah. He wants one above everyone else the whole time. Yeah. If he gets that third world title... Do you know what I mean? That's another record for Conor. That's the way he thinks, man. So I wouldn't be surprised that, but I think there's definitely sort of... It's a cloudy path at the moment. We're not really sure what the fuck's going on again. And like
that's where he thrives, right?
Yeah, that's where everyone's interested now again. And man, look at the traction online. I think that's all we need to say. And like,
I think it's fair to say it's definitely the biggest pay-per-view ESPN have done.
Yeah, and yeah, what did I say? A million, I reckon. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I think we're 1.2, was it, or something?
Did they retract? I don't think they revealed anything.
That was what they were trajecting, I think.
Trending.
Yeah, 1.2 or something like that. But, yeah, listen, even in here in Ireland, I know you weren't obviously here, but certain outlets started, you know.
I saw that, yeah.
covering Conor McGregor.
We need to do something.
Again, yeah. And like, it just shows you how stupid the media are here at certain times. And, you know, clearly, YouTube, Everton was trending number one, McGregor.
But this is the thing, his redemption story, the fact that he had fallen off with the people. That was the whole thing about this fight. Like, if that isn't there, there's no storyline. Yeah. He's just fighting a dude.
Yeah. But, oh, yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just sick.
Yeah.
Like, the whole fucking countdown show was built around this, him throwing shit at a bus. And Irish people going, oh, we don't like him that much. Like, what are you talking about?
Look at him. Isn't he great now? That's all the L ones going around the country saying that.
Nah. I'm happy to see him.
Oh, yeah. Then. The sport needs people like him. Yeah. You know, we need these big mainstream draws. And look at him. He was at the Grammys last night as well. And, you know, maybe a few months ago he wouldn't have been there. So, yeah, listen, a win does a lot of things for anyone's reputation and their stock. So, listen, it's good. It was a good week and good for the sport of mixed martial arts. And that's one thing I think we're happy to be saying, that we're not, you know, running around fucking headless chickens talking to everyone.
But this is what people don't understand. We want him to do well. Like, we don't want to be reading this shit about him. We don't want to be reading any bad things. Like, we're just hoping
it's all in the cage.
Yeah, and it can, you know, this guy has no ceiling.
Yeah,
you know, he really didn't. And you know what I mean. So it's all good things. But
let's get away from it.
Yes. That's enough of you talking about that, Niall. I know.
Quick one. Who does he fight next? Shotgun to the head. Come on.
Diaz. I know. Yeah. Look, I'm not saying that's the fight I want. I want Masvidal, being perfectly honest. But you guys are all telling me that that's not hot shit anymore.
I've never liked the Masvidal fight. I don't know anyone's...
Savage strikers.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
He takes... Right, so here's also the thing. From McGregor's point of view, you get to fight a guy who's going to box with you. You're in your own wheelhouse. This guy has all the momentum from last year. He's just beat Nate Diaz. You know, and he's the BMF. He's one of the most highest traction fighters of last year. And Conor goes in and starches him. What happens then?
Oh, yeah, well, that's great for him. But I just stay at 55, man.
Oh, well, he's not doing that. Like, did we know that he's not doing that? He's fought 170 already.
Mm. Gaethje next, or I think someone in the top five. I think he's going
to
be
like
the
season. That's John Kavanagh's show. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, I like it.
I like it too.
Okay, move on.
Okay. Right. There was a lot of European action over the weekend, not only in Bellator, but also in the UFC from Raleigh, North Carolina. Arnold Allen is absolutely ridiculous at the moment. 7-0 now with the UFC, 9-0 run in total with all promotions. Got it done against Nick Lentz. Surprised here, Nick Lentz, thinking he won the decision afterwards there, because I thought Arnold was absolutely on fire. Subsequently, after the fight, after the decision, Lentz puts out a video of himself with a cut cornea. I've asked Arnold about that here in the interview, and he seems quite surprised that Lentz has brought that up. You know, he said he had a few situations in the cage himself that he wasn't all too pleasant with. He called them veteran moves. He doesn't know why Nick is bringing this up after the fact, but unfortunately as well, he's ruled himself out of London. That was one thing that we'd really wanted to see. You know, if they could turn around that quickly, it was always going to be tough for him. He had a big fight against massive veterans, even Josh Emmett before Nick Lentz took his place. But looks like that's not going to happen. But look, absolute pleasure to speak to Arnold Allen, a man who's flying at the moment. I feel like a big, big fight is in his crosshairs. Look, they should rematch Josh Emmett, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, do that in July or something when both the lads are fit. It's a brilliant fight. But look, we had some phone difficulty with Arnold. He graciously gave us his time from the airport there, so we're a bit in and out. So Noel McGrath had to do some master editing to make it sound beautiful.
Why did you even say it to them? It's perfect. You don't even notice. Fucking idiot.
But I'm doing it in case Arnold listens back and he's like, what did this... You know what I mean?
Fine.
Yeah, but so look, we'll leave you with Arnold here. It's about 10 minutes or so, probably a bit less. Talk to you again afterwards. And now we are joined by Arnold Allen, a man who has put together a 7-0 run with the UFC now and is joining us from the airport as he returns home after victory over Nick Lentz in Raleigh. First of all, how good does that feel, Arnold? 7-0, that is a ridiculous run to put together, my friend.
Yeah, it's a great feeling. It's one of the toughest divisions in the UFC, I think. So, yeah, very happy to have, I think, the longest win streak, or one of the longest win streak. I don't know.
Yes, it's incredible. And, you know, of course, it was meant to be Josh Emmett that you took on. In the end, it became Nick Lentz. Did you have any deliberation about that? Or was it just as soon as the name came up, it's a guy with so much experience in the UFC, you said, I'll take that one?
Yeah, you know, I was kind of like worried. I was thinking maybe we were going to get someone like unknown, sort of, you know, maybe outside of the UFC. And I think at this point in my career, that does nothing for me, so... I was happy that it kind of worked out that Nick Lentz was able to or his opponent got injured and he was able to step in. So yeah, I was happy about that. He's a veteran, you know, he's a bit of a name. He's fought the who's who of people in the division, and yeah, it worked out good.
What does that do for your confidence when you're after coming through? Like, I know you've already got five other wins, but just Gilbert Melendez and him in your last two fights, it must be an incredible confidence booster for a young guy like yourself to be in with these legends, basically.
Yeah, definitely. It is a huge confidence booster. Like, Gilbert was a big one, but I was maybe a little bit more confident than I should have been in this one, so yeah. I don't think I overlooked him, but I felt a bit more confident than I usually do, you know. So.
Yes, I saw your post-fight interview where you discussed, Nick thought he'd done enough to win. I think a lot of people agree with you when they saw you winning that fight. But I was wondering, have you seen the video that's just come out of him explaining about his eye being cut at the end of the second round? Have you seen this?
Yeah.
Do you remember the incident at all?
Yeah, I did see it. Well, whatever, man. It's a fight. I accidentally poked him in the eye, and I did. Yeah, it was an accident, fully. But, man, he was fighting so dirty anyway. Like, he was grabbing my shorts. I got scratches on my wrist where it was inside my gloves, like, trying to claw my hand, like, inside my gloves. I think I had double unders on the fence. He was gouging my eyes with both his thumbs, like, to get me off him. And he's going to post a video bitching about it. Like, come on, it's a fight, man.
Do you feel like that's like it's an attempt to sour the victory on you or anything like that? Do you feel?
Yeah, definitely. I've got people sending me messages like, "Oh, calling me cheater and stuff." Like, your guy's the cheater. So it's a fight at the end of the day, and at least if he's going to fight clean and then complain about an accident that happened, fine. But he was doing dirty veteran tricks on me, so whatever.
Mm. You know, a lot of people in the UK, I guess, were hoping that you'd come through this fight and you'd be able to fight in March, but I saw you're nursing a hand injury after this. I feel like that could be, you know, with so little time between the two cards, that could kind of hinder you appearing on that March card. Is that fair to say it's probably not going to allow you fight that week?
Yeah, I'd pretty much say that's not happening.
Oh, no.
It's going to be, I reckon, at least a month till I can sort of get back to throwing it around. It's not broken or anything, but it's definitely a pretty bad sprain. I'm getting an x-ray tomorrow, so hopefully it's all good. But yeah, it's going to be at least another 4 weeks, I reckon.
Was that your right hand or your left?
Right hand, just from the jabs.
Yes, beautiful job with the right hand as well. When did you feel it go?
Yeah, it was good. I found my range, I was getting the jabs off. Left hand was a little bit tricky, it wasn't sore, because he kept switching southpaw orthodox, so it was a bit tougher. But yeah, the jabs were far enough nice.
And do you remember when it hurt, what round it was in that you hurt it?
Yeah, in the second round, like when the round finished, I sort of noticed it. And then the third round, I felt it.
I also saw, you know, when you were speaking after the card, you know, you and your dad did the post-fight interview. I thought that was really cool. But I saw your dad saying, like, how, you know, you didn't get an interview. And you do deserve a huge amount of recognition for this. Being 26 years of age, having a 7-0 run with the UFC, you were quite low down the card. I mean, does it feel like that? Do you feel like this should be recognized a bit more? And they maybe should have allowed you to speak and get your name out there a bit more?
Yeah, I think so, but I suppose it was a bit of a different show as well. It's a bit low key, you know? Everything was rushed. There wasn't like a public weigh-in. There's no like press conference or media day. It was a bit smaller, a bit quieter. It was kind of nice in a way, but yeah, I guess that's how it goes.
Yeah, and I do appreciate you saying this, because I know you're not the kind of guy that is looking for fame from this at all. Like, you just want to be considered the greatest fighter in the world, right? So I'm sure you're really uncomfortable saying this kind of stuff, you know, because you are trying to be the greatest fighter in the world. And whereas a lot of other fighters, you see them, they are just trying to bolster their profile more so than chasing the belt at times.
Yeah, definitely. After every fight, all the guys in the UK are like, always give me huge support. It's great. It's like the fight week before or after, it's always great. But yeah, you know, I don't do myself any favors at the same time. I don't call people out. I don't tell people when I want to come back and I like urgently want to fight and all that stuff. Kind of a bit chilled, you know.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. It's nice for a change. But how about your dad taking a pop saying the reason why you're not finishing guys is because you don't have a lot of power? Is he just saying this because he's a strong man and I know your brother is as well? Is this a running joke in the family? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, because my brother lifts a lot of weights. He lifts a lot of weights, and I can't keep up with him. But, yeah, he's just taking the pissy.
You know, what about Emmett? Like, I mean, Josh Emmett, I know he is injured, and I know you're not looking at London. It might be towards the summer that you're looking, but is that a matchup you'd like to get set up? Because I feel like Emmett has great stock in the US. I feel like a win against him, and you're pretty much undeniable as one of the top contenders in the division. Is that still a fight that interests you in the future? I know this sounds like I'm asking you to call someone out, but I promise you, it shouldn't. I don't mean it to be that way.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've both done a camp for each other pretty much, so I mean, there'd be no reason why not, you know. And a win over Nick Lentz doesn't like put me in a position to be way above him, so I don't see where I went one day. The only way for him, I guess, if he's looking up the card, up the division, then I get it.
I was speaking to Jack Mason, your coach, today, and you're 26 years of age now. You're only recently gone 26, is that correct?
Yeah, Wednesday.
Wow, incredible. Yeah. He believes by the time you're 28, you will be a world champion. Is this a goal you guys have talked about, or is this something that you've all just kind of geared yourself towards for a long time, or is this the first time you're hearing this?
No, like, we've never really spoke about it, but yeah, mentally I have, you know, planned for something like that. That is the kind of time schedule I'd like. I said I'd like to accomplish everything before I'm 30, so yeah, sounds about right.
And do you, like, I mean, I'm seeing you getting so much bigger. Every time you're in there, you look so much bigger than your opponents. Do you think, like, there will be a move to 55 in the future? Because you're still quite young, right? You're still probably growing out.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I train with some 55ers and they're monsters, so I'll stay where I am.
And, I mean, I believe you're going home now. And is this perfect for you for the celebrations, the birthday celebrations, to be going back home?
That's it. Yeah, hopefully my mom's got a late birthday cake ready for me and all that. So get to see the dog. It's all good.
Right, well, thank you so much, Arnold. I hope your hand recovers. I hope I haven't soured the wind too much by bringing up Nick Lentz's video, have I? I feel like.
Nah.
Has that irritated you today?
Not at all. It kind of made me laugh a bit because he was fine proper day, and you know, accidents happen and. Yeah, it definitely did go in, and whatever.
Well, look, just keep doing you,
my friend. It's a fight at the end of the day. Yeah, it's like, what do people expect? It's a fight.
Okay. And you keep doing you. Your run cannot be disputed. Unbelievable stuff. I know we would have loved to see you in London, but it's amazing to see you doing your thing at the moment, and hopefully we'll have another big fight for you in the summer, Arnold.
Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you. All the best, man. Thanks.
Cheers. Bye.
A busy old Saturday night in our world, with UFC going down in North Carolina and Bellator coming live to us from Inglewood there at the Forum.
Inglewood.
So let's start with the UFC. Curtis Blaydes, you know, let's mention the main event. No Europeans in the main event, of course, but great win from him. Exploded into action in the second round and got the job done. A huge bolster of his stock, I'd say, like beating a former champion. Like he needed a win like that, I feel. Chiesa, obviously, against Rafael Dos Anjos. Dos Anjos on a bad run now.
Yeah, what is it? Four of his last five? Well, to what he's lost?
Yeah, it nearly like cheapens the Edwards win, you know? But he was coming off the win over Kevin Lee ahead of Leon.
Yeah, he's just looked really poor, man.
And Chiesa looks fucking huge.
He does, and it's about time he... Yeah. He's like, that's probably 5-6 years overdue. I know it's about second fight at welterweight, I think it was. He looked really good. Rafael is just not the fighter he was at all.
It's the first time he looked very small, I felt, at the weight. Like, I mean,
not even that, he looked clueless. He just, like, there's no real fluency, whether it's his hands or his, you know, what's he trying to do in there? Chiesa was pretty much, you know, I had it every round for Chiesa. It was very, very comfortable. I'm very impressive from Chiesa that he's able to do that, that he's able to be so versatile against a guy like RDA, because RDA used to be so good, and it's just a shadow. It's sad to see a guy go like that.
Mm. Yeah,
just
absolutely.
Deplete, like.
I don't know how Chiesa is going to get on with getting Covington, but fair play to him on the win.
Stupid call out. Like, I tweeted that. Like, what are you doing, man? Like, do something that's realistic. Covington's one, like, I do the same thing with Colby. It's just senseless fight. Mm. Totally senseless. Do something that you're going to get That's realistic. Like, fuck me. It was stupid.
Let's move on to the Europeans. Darko Stosic, very disappointing performance, I felt, against Hill. Hill improves to 7-0. Stosic now three fight skid, and not the guy we expected after his debut when he obliterated that dude in Hamburg. But look, he needs to figure something out here because he's just relying on one-shot power, and it's not going to do the job, especially against a volume striker like Hill. He'll wait from the throw that one dig, and then he was all over.
It was a good night for the Hills.
Yes, it was. Angela Hill, of course, as well, with that victory over Hannah Seifers.
Vicious.
It was fucking vicious. Further down the card, Arnold Allen, of course.
Really good, man.
His jab is unbelievable.
Yeah, like, and it's coming at you from
different directions all the time.
Look at the uppercut he threw a few times as well in between.
Left hand's getting really good, isn't it? Jesus Christ.
He's just good everywhere. He's just a fucking nightmare, man, to fight against. But
big dude for featherweight. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he is. He is a big dude.
I think it's hilarious his dad always lags him about being weak after every fight because he's obviously a bulldozer. He's not knocking anyone out.
Yeah, but that's like, I feel sorry for him to a certain extent because it looks like the UFC are just trying to bury this guy in. You know, no post-fight interviews, I said to you there before we went on.
Is that sometimes just a thing when there's been, like, there was three decisions in a row at that stage in the preliminary card? Could they have been like, right, we need to hurry this up? Like,
no.
No?
No, like, who gives a shit? Like, they're not going to, like, if they really want to put stock in someone and get behind someone, they'll definitely put a mic, you know, in their hands. And it was just, you know, I think they might look at Arnold and go, like, oh, he's a quiet guy, he's a respectful guy, he wants to, you know, as you said, funny in the interview there.
I was saying to you, I think he's very quirky, dude. I don't think they take the time.
They don't get that humour in the US as well. And, you know, I think he's a great fighter, really, really going places. But I'm just worried that the UFC won't really give him that push that he deserves.
He's
going to
be in an Edwards situation if he is. Right, yeah. Well, he's already there. He's 7-0, for fuck's sake, in the UFC.
Yeah, so, like, you know, has to be a rise now, you know, beating the guy like
the Emma fight.
Nick
Lentz. Make the Emma fight again.
Do it again, definitely.
An all-European fight between Justine Kish and Lucy Pudilova. Kish came away with the decision win. The Russian getting her hand raised there on the back of a two-fight skid. Lena Landsberg ran into Sarah McMahon and lost the decision. That's a tough one for Lena because she'd been looking good up until that point. You know, she had that great win over Tanya Evinger there in Stockholm when I was over there. And then she beat Macy afterwards. So, I mean,
Sarah McLachlan looked great.
Yeah. Oh, she's really deadly. Good. She's a serious grappler, man. Unbelievable. What about Brett Johns, though? Holy shit, man. That
beautiful
was a great
choke.
Did you see his post-fight interview?
No, I didn't.
He said he was thinking about packing it in.
It looked that way with all the Cardiff away matches going on with Ollie McBurney, the Sheffield United striker.
That was
madness.
He was saying his brother basically to talk him back into it, you know, to fighting again and, you know, coming off two losses. And, you know, he spoke very well. Really, I really enjoyed his post-fight interview. If anyone wants to watch it, they should go to MMA Fighting.
Brett's a good, intelligent guy. Like,
well, he was kind of saying, you know, I've been called the champ my whole life. And when you go in and you lose two fights like that, and people stop saying it to
we
you.
We always say it.
It messes with your head.
We always say it.
Yeah.
How do guys bounce back from losses? Not always positive.
Yeah. You know? It's like, I always think of Siri. I feel like Siri was one of the most excruciatingly honest fighters we ever had in Ireland. And he used to always say, like, after I win or lose, as soon as I don't have a fight in front of me, I get depressed. Because I'm like, I'd have nothing to guide my life towards.
People not texting me, people going, you know.
Yeah, now, I always text him to wreck his head, but I mean, you know, in general.
Ah, fuck him. He just abuses me on Twitter still. See that, when Liverpool are playing.
I love when that picks up,
Jesus Christ. But no, it is tough. And I'm happy for him, I am, because I think he's a great guy, and he's a great sort of competitor that Wales need in there. He's one of the poster boys for Welsh mixed martial arts.
Absolutely.
And listen, he's a really, really good fighter. He's a guy that can really well, and honestly, compete at the top of that division.
Absolutely, man. I think, like, even the variations he has from the back, like, he went for that Suvlev stretch again against your man just to get the choke. Like, he was puzzling Gravely so much, he didn't know what the fuck to actually be defending at one stage, and he gave up his neck. It was really, really nice.
Really nice finish in the end, anyway.
Did you stay up and watch Bellator 238 on Sky Sports? I felt like there was a lot of Europeans watching at the time. Like, it was a good feeling that we're all here talking about.
No, I watched it on Sunday.
Yeah.
I couldn't because it was in work in the office at 9, so I stayed up at 5 anyway. But, like, you know
you
yourself.
You eventually start fading, yeah.
Yeah. But no, I watched the whole card back.
Cyborg devastated Julia Budd.
Brilliant. It was like the old Cyborg.
She just went mental in the fourth round.
It was like the finish, I think, the fight we were at when she fought the New Zealand.
Yeah.
destroyed lady, Faye Van Dwyn, I think her name was, the fighter that we were at there, and I think it was UFC 189 when Invicta were on the night before, and she just tartined up, boom, 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 kicks, everything. It was just so, vintage Cyborg, amazing finish. And listen, very happy for her. It's been a tough few months. And she's you know, solidified her status in mixed martial arts folklore now, being what she's won every bloody title there probably is to win in mixed martial arts and all the big organizations. So
the Grand Slam, as they're calling it.
Crack and fight.
Look, I mean, I heard Sean Sheehan and Graham talking about this, or I saw a tweet about it. But I mean, Sinead Kavanagh get a few wins together and she could be right there. Like, I mean, in terms of, there's not a lot of talent.
Yeah, Sinead needs to, let's be honest, first of all, Sinead needs to get 3-4 wins behind her. She needs to,
I'd say 2 would do her.
You know, maybe, you know, sort out, you know, get on weight the whole time and do that consistently.
But I don't mind that, like, that matchup for Sinead, if you know what I mean. Like, when she's boxing,
savage. That's, you know, imagine watching that fight.
It'd be fucking crazy. Just imagine war. Chris Cyborg comes to Dublin.
It's like it's like fucking Jesus Christ. The two ladies just teeing off on each other with really good boxing
right, Sinead's 6-4 now. She just bet Olga Rubin. If she gets the Leslie Smith rematch, beats Leslie.
But I think that's it.
That's how you get it, isn't
I
it?
I think that's how you get it. You have to go
there. It's a great show by the lads.
And listen, like, fucking Leslie Smith as well. Like, do you know what I mean? Run that back.
That was a great fight.
I had Leslie winning, and I feel like, you know, I've watched it back enough. People had, you know,
Sinead
were saying it was a robbery. It was rubbish. That's bullshit. But yeah, run that fight back, man. And I think the winner of that would be great. And you know, do it here in Dublin. Like, there's obviously, we're going to move on and probably have a little word about him. But Sergio Pettis as well. You know, there's been a bit of back and forth with him and James Gallagher. Like, that would be a cracking fight to. Obviously, James has to fight Cal Allenor first, and that's a very, very tough task in its own right. But
what did you think of the stoppage on the Sergio fight? Because he knocked the dude out. Basically,
the referee was very late.
It was some fucking.
He was very late. He probably could. He probably should have stopped it with the strikes.
With the dig, yeah.
And listen, but Sergio, you know, a known dude.
Oh, he's clinical. Those guys. Absolutely clinical. Like.
What a performance! And he's been looking for that. And I think that's probably why the UFC sort of released him, because he was just going to decisions the whole time.
He's
going to
be a problem for everyone.
Everyone. He's class, man. That guy was nearly talked up better in Milwaukee than his brother.
Mm.
He was the young little protege that was, Showtime's brother, this guy's going to be a fucking killer. It hasn't worked out that way to a certain extent. But listen, the guy's competing in the UFC against some of the best guys in the world, coming into Bellator, doing that. He will be super happy to finish that fight in that way as well. Knockdown and a submission. Fighters love that. We all know that. So.
I love it too. Even though I don't like it to be that brutal sometimes.
But listen, vintage performance. And that's a fight I think we could see by the end of the year potentially. And like, I think, you know, if James beats Cal and beats him impressively, like, you're sort of hard to look away from that, because it's such a big fight. It really is, with two of such big young names in Bellator's division, that, you know, do it in Madison Square Garden, do it in Dublin, do it somewhere. That's a fight that would get people talking, definitely, and really excited.
Absolutely. Adam Borix came up short against Darian Caldwell, suffered a first round rear naked choke. And look, I said before this fight, a lot of people forget about the Pico fight before Pico got knocked out. He was dominating Adam on the ground, and Caldwell's far more accomplished wrestler even than Pico, so it's like, I think he is anyway. So, I mean, I feel like that was always a way it could have went.
He looked nervous.
Yeah, well,
and I think that's sort of what happened. You know, he was hesitant at the start, sort of, you know.
Once he gets you down, you're not getting back up, basically.
Yeah. And I think he threw a knee or something and then missed, and then Caldwell took him up.
He was
near the cage and then got Caldwell him to the ground.
Caldwell kind of just stormed him, threw a few strikes, so he'd have to back up, and then as soon as his back's touched the fence, you're going down.
Yeah, so, and then you knew it was sort of, you could sort of see the end was coming there, and I think he was just like, fuck. And he looked very shook after the fight. And obviously, a guy who's, I think the commentary said he'd never lost in any form of combat.
Nothing.
Beforehand. So that's a tough one to take. And we talk about Brett Johns, and that's going to be very interesting to see how he hops back from that.
Young guy like this, it could be the making of him.
Or the breaking of him.
Yeah, absolutely. But I feel like Adam, we've talked to him a good few times. Yeah. He's got his head screwed on. He doesn't seem like a guy who is going to beat himself up too much. But of course, first loss, you're dead right. It could go either way. But just Caldwell v. AJ, that is a great fight, isn't it?
Fuck me.
If fucking AJ McKee beats him.
That's like that's a UFC main event fight.
Oh, that's serious.
You know what I mean? It's an absolutely
former champion
fight.
V the future underground champion.
I do think AJ beats him. I think AJ is just more tools everywhere.
He's a lot bigger than fucking Darian as well.
He even looked it, didn't he?
Like, way bigger, yeah. I didn't see him faced by at all.
Yeah. Like, I think McKee's the guy.
Oh, he's the truth. He's unbelievable.
He's the guy in Bellator. He's just, he's just brilliant. Like, you know, look at the fights we've had him, seen him the last number of months. So it's just everywhere. He's just so good everywhere. His striking's excellent, really good on the ground, really good off his back, good wrestler. Like, there's not one area where there's a fault. But there really isn't. So, like, I think it's a tough one for Caldwell as well. No bantamweight champion either at the moment, so that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting. Also, Raymond Daniels, you remember his highlight reel KO in Birmingham, I believe it was, in his last outing. Another good win. This time we got to see a bit more of him on the ground, which was nice. Also, Aaron Pico with a sweet left hook knockout of Daniel Carey. AJ Agazarm also gets a submission win. You know, AJ Agazarm, such a big name from a big team. Obviously lost his debut, has won three since, but it does show you that, like, what Dylan has done in the sport is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, AJ is right there in terms of jiu-jitsu competition. Mm. He's with the Diaz brothers. I mean, there's so many things there you feel that would compel people to him, and there definitely is people compelled to him, but not nearly on the level of Dylan Danis, right?
Dylan's hanging out with McGregor.
I know, but like, it's not like that's all you got to do. There was loads of guys I'd never seen before in that camp. It's not like they're famous now. Dylan's definitely used his platform.
Oh, 100%. And degree, he's done very well. He's been very provocative on social media. Like, look at some of the stuff he puts up. So that's going to get you, you know, likes. But listen, you know, this game's all about building. And we talked about, you know, Arnold.
How can you not say this?
Arnold Allen earlier on. And, you know, UFC, Scott Coker, you know, Martin Lewandowski, whoever the head guy is, they want guys like this. They want guys who are fucking brash. They want guys who go out and put their fucking dick out in social media. That sort of stuff. They love all this shit, man. They say they don't a lot. They do. So that's where I sort of worry for these guys. They
love it until they have to say...
It's disingenuous sometimes, but sometimes, you know, we saw it with Colby Covington over the years. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? It's sort of make a decision, but I can understand the way guys want to keep this genuine line as well, but sometimes it doesn't always work.
Curtis Milner got off to a good start with Bellator. Good debut on a catchweight bout, got a decision win. Anthony Taylor against Chris Avila. Pretty boy. Man, he's on a five-fight win streak.
Listen, I like that guy. I'll give him a bit of respect. He's always respectful when you see him here in Dublin when he was fighting with Bama and when he was fighting with...
And he always has a few things to say when you turn the camera on.
He does. He does, definitely. Yeah, always when the camera's on. But listen... What a great story. Obviously, well-documented depression problems. Felt suicidal, I think, at one point. You know, really, really good story. On a, you know, negative record. Comes back in. Wins a regional promotional title, asks for Bellator, gets on Bellator, goes on, in fairness, Chris Avila, obviously from Diaz's team as well, and he fought R10 before UFC, and getting a win there, man, fair play to him. I've hats off. That is what martial arts is all about. Like, it really is, and it's a really good story, and nothing but best wishes to that young lad, Andy Taylor. It was fair play. He's battled back, deserves everything he gets.
Absolutely. Now we'll have an interview with Dricus du Plessis, the double champ.
Dricus!
The double champ from EFC, also former KSW champion, the last person to beat one of our faves on the show, Roberto Saldich. Like, Dricus has pretty much done everything now. Like, I mean, in terms of, he's gone back to South Africa, he's won the welterweight title, he's fought, like, basically an untouchable prospect at welterweight.
What did you ask him?
What did I ask him?
Put two and two together, mate.
Scott, ask him. Hey. Yeah, he did say he's into that, and I love that fight. Like, that's a great fight for Scott. Brilliant fight for KSW, but you can feel like he's nearly at that stage where he's like, when the fuck am I going to get this call? And he deserves it. Look, like, he definitely deserves it. He's with Danny Rube now as well, which is a great guy to have on his side. So, I feel like great to check in with him again. Like, don't forget as well, this fella bet Jolton Santos, who's on a tear now, when he
UFC.
He bet him in KSW after the Selvage fight when he moved up to 185. You know, that's his last loss. He's gone on to beat Alex Lahore, and he had a win in EFC recently as well. But I think it's probably time. He's there or thereabouts. I'd say if he can get a big win, I mean, a win over Askham would nearly guarantee him, I'd say, at this stage. But look, we'll have to wait and see how it goes. But great to speak to Dricus. We'll be back in about 10 minutes. Now, I didn't expect to meet a double champion from South Africa and a former KSW champion while I was in Las Vegas. But lo and behold, here is Dricus du Plessis. And, You know, he's a man who everyone believes should be in that UFC middleweight ranks. He's gone back home. He's reclaimed that middleweight title with EFC. We already know how good he was in his KSW run at welterweight. But first of all, Las Vegas, what has you here?
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome to be here. It's my first trip down to Vegas. I actually just came to watch the fights because I'm in Florida training. And the fights, the Conor and Cowboy fight just had me. And I knew, like, it was just it's an easy flight. So I was like, I'm going to definitely do it. So I just spent a few days here training and enjoying the fights. It was awesome.
What did you think of that, the big show there? Does it kind of whet your appetite? Like, I mean, are you looking at that going, geez, I can't wait to be a part of something this big on this scale?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm just looking at it and thinking, man, I can't wait to be on billboards that size, to sell out big crowds like that. And it's a matter of time, and I can't wait to do it. It just looks incredible.
The last time some of the European fans might have seen you might have been that the fight with Soldic in October 2018. But I can remember you heard after that. And, of course, you haven't fought at welterweight since then. But, I mean, you're a huge guy. You're sitting here beside me. It's quite obvious, I mean, that getting down to welterweight would not be the easiest thing in the world for you. Was that camp particularly bad where you're like, I have to stop doing this to myself?
So, no, I've never missed weight at welterweight. But, I mean, the cut was like, it's always been a big cut. But, like, it seemed like as I got older, I got bigger and stronger. Like, the cut just became more and more difficult. And to a stage where everything didn't, it didn't make a lot of sense for me to make that big cut anymore after that fight. I mean, it was just that I actually signed a welterweight fight directly after that with Boris Minkowski. And my doctors just let me know, listen, blood test says you're taking years away from your career with this big cut. And I mean, now at 185, I feel awesome. I feel great at middleweight. And I actually have more fights at middleweight than welterweight. So, and I already had the belt at middleweight then. And then I was like, cool, I can fight middleweight. And now I fought in KSW twice again now. And, you know, at middleweight, and it's looking great. I had a great fight with in London, in Wembley Stadium. That was October this year. Like, yeah.
And Santos has done so well since then as well. Like, yeah. I mean, he's done really, really well.
Yeah, I think he was on a 15-fight win streak when I faced him. He was on a 15-fight streak, so that was a big opponent for me. And I got the finish in the second round. It was awesome for me, and I felt super great at 185. And then I had this fight in December at 185 back at EFC for the first time in over 2 years. And, man, it felt great to fight back home. And, now it's on for bigger things, and just keep on doing what I'm doing. And, you know, this year will be my year. I can't wait.
Yeah, I was going to say that. How did it feel to come back? Like, was it a big kind of hero's welcome to go back to EFC after that time with the different promotions?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially that was the first time I fought in my hometown in South Africa. So it was a big fight for me as a personal achievement. And, you know, I started my career in the EFC from the first day. So to be back there and going, fighting in front of my home crowd, fighting in front of my home country after being away for so long, it was a crazy welcoming, and it was probably one of the craziest crowds I've ever fought. Not the most people, because the arena just wasn't that big. But, I mean, the crowd just went crazy, and it's you know, that feeling of fighting at home in front of your people, it's absolutely awesome.
A lot of people say to me, like, you're the next level South African fighter. Like, we have seen South African fighters in the UFC, but it's going to be very, very different when you go into these ranks. I mean, does it feel like you will be the guy that pushes the envelope further than ever has been within the UFC for South Africa?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, we had a few guys, and that was a older generation, if you will, guys that came to UFC, didn't do that great, but still, I mean, they paved the way for us. And now we have John Madge. He's also in the UFC, and he's doing well. He's doing great. He's doing great things. And I'm a young guy. That's the big advantage for me. I'm only 25 years old. So for me, this is like I am the next gen in fighting. I haven't been doing like then. That's what they say, the next generation. And I truly believe that I'll bring something new. I'll bring something that the people haven't seen before, and do exactly that. You know, put South Africa, really put them on the map, and really, you know, being the first one to get a belt for South Africa in the UFC.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask, because there's so many KSW fans, and every time they're talking about who's going to fight for the title next, Scott Askham has put together a great run there, and of course everyone is saying Drickus has got to fight him next. You know what I mean? Everyone thought that was going to be the case. Are you no longer with KSW? Is that something that is a possibility ever, or is it just crosshairs for the UFC at the moment?
No, absolutely. I'm still with KSW. Like, my contract's not exclusive. So, I mean, I want to fight with KSW either March, but preferably April. That would be great to fight back in Wroclaw, where I first won the belt. Back in KSW, I mean, if something doesn't come up. But, you know, the fight with Scott, that's a massive fight for me, and that's a fight I would love to take. And, you know, I know he's saying a lot of things because I wasn't fighting at 185. But, you know, if they want to give me another fight before I fight him, I'm cool with that. I can fight, like, at this weight, I can fight back-to-back. It doesn't bother me. So, I mean, it's a matter of time. Like I said, if he doesn't want to take the fight right now, I'll fight another guy until they can't deny me that shot. So if that fight comes, that's a fight I want. And if it doesn't, I mean, if I have to fight another guy to become a number one contender, that's good with me as well.
It's kind of crazy that they haven't got you over, though, already. Like, two weight division champion in EFC, a champion with KSW, and, like, you know, knocking on the door, fighting for another title in another division with KSW. Is it kind of, and you're only 25, and you're a middleweight. They don't have that many people at middleweight. Like, surely you must be going, what do I have to do here? Like, is it like one of those things? Is there anything in your mind, like, if I get this next thing, it's undeniable? Or are you already undeniable as far as you're concerned?
Man, to be honest, like, for me, I just know if I just keep on doing what I'm doing and I have the right people to help me, like, you know, I do have the right people that's helping me to get where I need to be. For me as a fighter, I just need to keep on winning, keep on, you know, keep my name out there in the international ranks, you know, keep people talking, keep people wanting until it becomes an undeniable force. And that's what I believe. So I don't think there's one thing I have to do. I just think it's a matter of, you know, situation, stars aligning perfectly, and the big opportunity will come. And now for me, I'm enjoying the whole journey of making it to the big stage, and just keep on, like, I don't have one final destination that I'm after. I just want to fight the best guys in the world and keep on proving myself. So for me, it's like, it's not like I'm feeling, what do I have to do? I just know it's gonna happen at some stage. It's gonna be undeniable, and that's I just can't wait. I mean, I'm enjoying what I'm doing right now, fighting some of the best fighters in the world, fighting some badass guys outside of the UFC. It's awesome.
Does it feel badass kind of making your way across to Europe and fighting those guys? It's a big trip, right? Like, and I feel you're coming from a different continent. I feel like, do you feel like a lot of pressure to represent, like, when you come over here? Because I can remember when you came in first and you flatlined Solid that time. I was like, oh my God, you know what I mean? It must feel incredible. Do you like that kind of gunslinger attitude coming in from different terrain and taking out the European top guys?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I pretty much, when I was a double division champion in EFC, and I mean, I fought Yannick Bahadi, who was from he was the Bama champion. I won the belt from him, and I mean, so there was some European people that already knew who I was, and I fought Rafał Hartek from Poland as well before signing with KSW in EFC, and so when I went to Poland, there was a few people that knew what was going on, and then there was. Everybody was like, why is this guy getting his title shot immediately? And I mean, I knew just, like, this is a big opportunity. That was the biggest opportunity. I was the first South African to go fight for a belt in a major promotion outside of South Africa. And so there was a lot of pressure, but I feel those pressure situations just bring out the best in me. And, you know, knowing a whole country, basically you're representing a whole country, everybody's rooting for you. I mean, it's absolutely awesome. It just brings out complete best in me. And when I got that win and, you know, put South Africa on the map in Europe as listen, these guys, they have some badass guys out there, and we do have a lot of badass fighters back home. It's absolutely awesome. And I mean, to just be conquering the world, that's what I'm after. Just like one continent at a time, I guess.
Is there any kind of, like, when you're looking at the UFC roster and you're like, that would be an ideal fight for me? Like, you know, if I could pick my debut opponent, it would be that guy. Is there anyone out there like that you think about?
No, not really. I look at the whole division, and obviously when I'm comparing myself, I'm looking at the top five guys all the time. I'm not comparing myself with the newcomers or guys. And even though that's probably where I'll start, I'm having my sights on the top five guys. That's the guys I'm looking at. That's the guys I want to compare myself to. So, I mean, there's, for me, a perfect debut would be somebody getting injured and I'm fighting a top 10, top five guy on my debut. That would be a perfect debut for me. And I mean, if it doesn't happen that way, to climb that ranks, I'm looking forward to that as well. So whichever direction it goes, I'm ready for it.
So you're you're basically saying I'll get thrown to the wolves if that's the way it is. If this is the way the option comes up, I'm happy to get thrown for the wolves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if they can let me know on a 2 weeks' notice, listen, we have a top five guy that pulled out. We need you to I'll make that weight, and I'll make sure to make the fly over here and you know step up to the occasion. And that's one thing I know. I have the BMT to do that. Like when the pressure is on, I can perform. So I mean, that's how I have my sights set on somebody pulling out, maybe fighting a big name, my first fight. That's an ideal situation for me.
It's amazing. I mean, will we say by the end of the year, do you believe you'll be a UFC fighter? Are you that confident?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, right now with where I'm at, I'm loving it, but I'm 100% sure that I'll be a big name in the world and on the biggest stage in the world before the end of 2020, most definitely.
Thank you so much, Rickers. This was a great to talk to you, man. Well, wasn't it good to be back playing the hits once again? Back with the band.
Fuckers. So it's getting a bit of abuse.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm trying to increase the peace here.
What's this crystal shit you fuckers talk? I really don't get it.
All right, man, I don't want you disrespecting crystals, first of all.
Fuck your
all
crystals. Right. Like, I mean, crystal fucking meth.
Like, you're insulting my beliefs now. My belief structure and system. I don't do that to you, Noel, you know what I mean? I don't come after your religion. Rugby, okay?
It's certainly not rugby.
But, I mean, sumo I just thought it was a bit too harsh. Phil O'Connor made a sly joke about Fatburger. But Jose Young's and you got into it a few times over
the
weekend.
Look at the state of that guy. Look at the state of that guy. He's like, you know, he's like one of those toilet cleaners. You dip down the jacks. I will. Like, he's one of those young lads you'd see in school that I probably would have bog washed back in the day.
What's bog washing?
Bog washed is you get their head, you put it in the toilet, flush it. Or, you know, occasionally do a guffer. Are you suggesting? I'm joking.
Are you suggesting that? Never like, the bleach from the toilet may have dyed his hair. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that could possibly be the case from dipping his head down the jacks, yeah.
Jesus Christ, I didn't think of that.
Yeah. And, you know, I was going to actually put something up the other day, and I thought, nah, I better not. Like, because I don't offend the people of Arizona. But you know, remember that song from the Kings of Leon, Arizona?
No.
Poorhouse, Arizona.
No.
What's it say?
If it wasn't on the fourth.
The lyrics are good, basically, and it'd be insulting to Jose. But people
Jose's
from Arizona,
from Rhode Island, though.
Oh, is he? Is that why he sounds like an American or a New Yorker?
I don't know, but he moved there. So I'm just so you know. Like, I mean, he obviously wasn't hard enough to stay in New York. That's the way I saw it. Like, you know.
Yeah,
I mean?
He's a fucking mouthpiece. You know what I like to do? I don't like mouthpieces. I'm the only one who'd be a fucking mouthpiece around here, right?
So, there'd be two hits. You hitting him and him hitting the floor.
And Phil, as for Phil, like, just disappointed, Phil.
Phil
just disappointed.
Is a big lover of yours, and to hear such
venom,
really.
Yeah, what have I done to any of these fuckers? Come on the attack. She's like,
well, I mean, I've seen you abuse Phil a few times, I have to say. But, I mean, he usually doesn't fire back in such fierce ceremony. I think, you know, can we try and make... build a bridge between your old bash and the A-side.
Nah, fuck the A-side. The fucking A-side. The fucking minus E-side, it should be called. What the fuck?
Listen,
like,
man. I'm going to get you some pyrite.
The A-side. What does the A stand for? Asshole. Like, fucking...
I'm going to get you some pyrite.
Arizona and asshole.
I'm going to get you some pyrite, and I'm going to get you some tiger's eye. Just to help you. Just so you can feel it.
Oh, listen, I've never gone out in air. He's on air... fucking baiting me. Like, who the fuck is this guy?
Is it only going to be settled in a fist fight?
Yeah.
Well, look, I'm sorry, Jose, I tried.
Like, I would bury that guy.
You've talked yourself into...
I'd snap that pencil neck.
He brought it on himself. That's all I'm going to say.
He's a turkey.
Look, I love Jose. And I love
you know what I had for dinner last night? Turkey. And I gave it a good old stuff and I fucking batter you. All right.
There you go. I'm going to have to pass on this message on...
Oh, no, he'll hear it. Yeah.
Oh, he'll hear
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you hear it. Hear it, bitch.
Do you think he's a big fan of yours?
Obviously.
Looks up to you a lot, I'd say.
Obviously, yeah.
Well, look, I think that's... Look, we've given Jose his time to speak about his fellow Irishman, Noel McGrath.
Irish.
And, you know, I don't like to see us falling out like this, but...
I didn't start
I feel
it.
Like you didn't start
I
it.
I didn't start it, yeah.
Jose Youngs has a sharp tongue.
No, but he's a mouthpiece. Oh. There's a difference. He says nothing that's actually sensible.
Jesus.
So, and he couldn't understand me either. Excuse me, how can you not understand these dulcet fucking tones? Get with it. Right?
The signature dulcet tones.
Yeah, like, phew. Wow.
It's just a bit too close to home there.
That hole is getting fucking deeper. Keep digging it, son. Bring it. Fucking, that's the end
it's
of
nearly
it.
Nearly out the fucking throne.
I want to move on.
Well, look, it's been lovely to be back with you. And this is the kind of...
I feel the energy.
Yeah, I can feel it.
I can feel it.
Don't need crystals for energy on Eurobash.
I want to kick someone now. I want to kick the TV. Get out of here.
Yeah, well, I guess that's all. Obviously, we should mention... It's not going to be until, what, Bellator now? Bellator will be back. The next time Bellator is in Dublin, right? That weekend you just
22nd of February.
And the next time we have UFC is John Jones.
Next week.
That's not next week, the weekend
after. Week after, yeah.
February 8th. So, yeah. So, we're going to have to fill up next week with a load of shite. So,
I think we have a few avenues we can go down.
Do multiple interviews, maybe.
Yeah.
And we could do a few more.
One I mentioned to you earlier on, maybe. there you go.
I like that one, yeah.
Yes, that one could be good. Yeah, listen, I'm sure we'll have something to talk about. Something will fucking happen anyway.
Yeah.
It's MMA, like, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
McGregor will have a fight in end soon, that's what I reckon.
Yeah, he might retire or anything. Yeah. Who knows? It's going to be the headlines anyway.
That is true. But now, listen, like, before we wrap it up, I think, you know, if he's going to stick to this plan, something's going to be announced imminent.
Oh, that's what I said. Like, I had a few people reaching out to me recently. I was like, he could fight in April. Like, he could fight in April or May.
Yeah.
But I think the attraction of having a July International Fight Week might be too much to turn down for the UFC. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Just for, like, a big card. Like, who's bigger? Like, you know what I mean? You put him against anyone, it's the biggest fight they can put on, basically.
Yeah, everyone's talking about the Raiders Stadium now as well. And
doesn't look fucking ready for
No, it won't be till September or something like that. Yeah. I think it's launching in July or something.
It'll still be roasting in Vegas in September.
Yeah, it will. Yeah. But they need to have it sort of half hot, like.
Yeah.
So, be interesting to see what happens, but yeah, let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I need to go and get some TVs fixed tomorrow.
Oh, broke TVs.
Oh my god, I gave this big, huge TV. Yeah. Gave it, they come back with my man Dan now, we're saving for the mortgage. I gave them the big TV, took another TV I had bought previously that they were using, and put up in my room. So, they need that one back. Three TVs I own, and I end up without one, but these are the breaks, my friend.
Fuck that.
And my car, someone fucking messed with my new car, man, and smacked up the back of it. It's going to cost me like $1,000 to get it fixed.
Jeez, I had a close call today with my new drone I bought. Jesus Christ, like, I was getting too...
I saw the first one you did was deadly. You landed right in front of you.
Yeah, I bought a DJI Mavic Mini, and I bought them as hungover, actually, fucking regretting it now, sort of half. Well, I would have today if I hadn't got it. The house is pretty high, and I smacked it into the fucking... I was going over the roof trying to get some shots just for the crack, and I was put it up by the chimney, and I'm it clipped it with the wind. I was like, oh, fuck! And the thing, you can see it obviously on your phone, the screen.
No way.
So I'd get the ladder out, man. It's not fucking tall, like, and thankfully I got it back, and it doesn't seem to be...
You must have lost your athleticism, anyway, if you managed to...
And I still have it. Listen, the belly is deception. It's
fuel tank for a sex machine.
I still am. I was called the cat back in the day.
I still call you the cat.
And they used to call me Scalacci as well. Remember Salvatore Scalacci in Italian 90?
The man who ruined Irish dreams.
Yeah, that guy. And, I was known as a... I was a very athletic young man. And I'm going to lose this belly. I am. I'm actually going to... I've said it for the last week. I'm on a diet. I'm going to start watching what I eat. Not a diet. I don't believe in diets, but just
lifestyle change.
Lifestyle change. And I am going to do it because I'm getting really fucking... My hips are getting sore and shit.
I lost a stone.
It's this game. It's so fucking tough, man.
2 weeks before that card.
Yeah.
You can go on the PT Crash diet and we'll get fucking weight off you. I'll do it with you.
I can get weight off. I know to get weight off. It's just fucking... being disciplined.
Boy, can eat, you know, will he be eating 3-4 meals a day and still getting weight off?
That's that's what I do. I think a good thing for me is getting up and having a massive breakfast.
I was going to say massive shite myself.
Shite as well after me coffee. You'll get it all out, clear out the old slurry pit with a bit of prune juice and coffee in your grand.
Right. Will we start scaling then every week? Because that'll put pressure on you to actually do it.
Yeah, no, I will. That's a good idea. Good idea. We'll start that from next week. We'll do the weigh-in next week and we'll book it down. I need to get at least fucking 2.
I'll weigh in with you then, right? Yeah. And we'll set ourselves goals.
Yeah, definitely. 100%.
That's a great idea.
Definitely.
Right, we love yous loads. Be back next week for a skinny Eurobash where we discuss our weight loss. And then next week we'll be back to MMA.
fuck you, Jose Youngs.
Oh, wow. Fuck Scalacci.